Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, proud B Corp, using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Vermont Student Assistance Corporation. VSAC helps students of all ages save, plan, and pay for college and career training with education and career planning services, need-based grants, scholarships, low-cost education loans, and Vermont's official 529 college savings plan. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Norwich Solar Technologies, providing complete clean energy services to Vermont's schools, towns, nonprofits, and businesses. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as the Green Mountain Club. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. And nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're going to take a break from all things impeachment to talk about all things snow in this hour. In the second half of our hour of the show today, we're going to talk about the legacy of Jake Burton Carpenter, the pioneer of snowboarding, founder of Burton Snowboards, who passed away over Thanksgiving week. But in our first half hour, we're going to be talking about huts. Imagine Vermont with a network of trails and backcountry huts that would allow a biker, hiker, or skier to travel throughout the mountains, staying entirely off the grid and in the backcountry. This isn't just a fantasy. Other states, such as Colorado, Maine, and New Hampshire, have well-developed hut systems, but Vermont is relatively new to this wave. In this half hour, we're joined by R.J. Thompson. He's the executive director of the Vermont Huts Association, to talk about how Vermont is turning this vision into reality. And in interest of disclosure, I sit on the board of the Vermont Huts Association. R.J., welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks, David. Glad to be here.
So, as I mentioned there, this has gone way beyond just the talking phase. There are now backcountry huts in Vermont. So give us a snapshot of what the status of huts in Vermont is right now.
Far beyond the talking phase. We've worked with a number of operators who have been kind of doing something similar to what we've envisioned. And we welcome them into the hut network. So now we have 7 partner operators that are as part of Vermont Huts Association. We help to market, promote, advertise, handle reservations in some cases of those trailside facilities. And we also built and opened a new hut last year. It's been open for about a year now, the Chittenden Brook Hut. So collectively we have 8 backcountry huts officially kind of in the network, and there are many more out there to be identified and welcomed into the hut. So we're kind of just scratching the surface of what's to come.
What is the big vision?
The grand vision really is a truly statewide hut network that is interconnected and allows users to traverse hut to hut, town to town, in some cases both during their travels, whether it be on foot, on bike, mountain bike, or on skis. And in some cases, snowshoes, to really give a true sense of what Vermont is, connect locals and visitors alike to the mountains, and create an enriching and an immersive outdoor experience for those visitors. In some cases, you could spend a night in a hut, head down into the nearest town, grab a coffee or a breakfast sandwich at Sandy's Bakery in Rochester, and head back up into the mountains for another night in the forest.
So you've mentioned there are now 8 huts online, one of them that it was built and run by the Vermont Huts Association. How many does does Vermont Huts plan to build? What would be that vision?
So looking north to south, if you were to imagine traversing Vermont from Canada to Massachusetts, similar to, you know, the way you can on the Long Trail or on the Catamount Trail, we've come up with between 30 to 35 locations linearly. So if you imagine expanding east-west as well, we're going to be getting a lot higher into the number of huts. And, you know, these are truly huts. You know, you ask 10 different people, what is a hut? You're going to get 10 different answers. The reality is we're talking about structures that sleep about 8 to 15 individuals. So the need to invest a ton of money into some of these buildings won't necessarily exist, because we can keep them small and sustainable and kind of in line with Vermont's landscape.
So I mentioned that, backcountry huts have been a big thing in other places. Colorado has an extensive hut network, dozens of huts that you can link together on foot or bike or skis. Why has Vermont been so late to this?
Well, just like legalizing marijuana, I think Vermont likes to take its time and really analyze things and make sure we do it right. And you know, that's maybe a poor analogy, but I think in Vermont we do appreciate well-thought-out plans. And whether that's the reason why we're a little bit late to the game, or the fact that we simply just didn't identify the demand, and maybe it's because a lot of our trail networks have been kind of a, you know, best kept secret. Maybe that's why. But I think for that reason, and the fact that some of these trail networks have grown so successfully, the Catamount Trail now being end-to-end has been, and of course the Long Trail run by the Green Mountain Club, and now the emerging chapters, mountain bike chapters under VIMBA, you know, the next logical step is to start to connect some of these experiences. And the way to do that is to allow folks to stay outside a little longer and stay trailside. And so I think while we maybe are a little late to the game, I think we're poised to kind of do it really, really well because of the existing recreation infrastructure that's been created by some of our trail partners.
And I know that, you know, being a user of some of these other hut systems, the advantage to being late is you get to learn from everyone else. And I remember having a conversation with folks in Maine where in the last decade they've built beautiful backcountry huts, that what they learned from people who'd come before them, like the Appalachian Mountain Club, and for those who've hiked in New Hampshire, they know that all of those nice Appalachian Mountain Club huts are on tops of ridges and mountains. So the ANC counseled the new kid on the block, so do yourself a big favor, build in the valleys, which they did. But what has Vermont learned from some of the folks who've come before about what to do and not do in the way of backcountry huts?
It's a great question, and yeah, indeed, it's definitely a lot more challenging to try and operate, manage, and sustain a structure when the only way to get there maybe is through human power, you know, hauling materials up, and in some cases using helicopters to drop supplies. And so, knowing that in some cases we have class 4 roads that maybe lead to a potential site, or a Forest Service road that is already in place and there's a campground there that, you know, half the year is closed because it's winter and that road doesn't get plowed. So can we identify sites that make it a little bit easier for ourselves to construct and then maintain? That definitely comes into play anytime we're on a site visit. What's our means of construction? What's our means of maintenance? And what's our means of getting guests there? So we look to other neighbors, Maine and New Hampshire, and we had conversations early on when we were getting started and kind of asked, if there's one thing you could do differently, what would you do? And two things became apparent pretty quickly. One was simplify and don't go too big. And the other was build low if you can. because for two reasons. Obviously, it's easier to maintain, but it's also a lot more fun to finish your day with a downhill run than it is skinning back up to the top after you're tired or biking back up. So ending on a downhill is always great. It makes the beer taste a little better. And it's also easier to maintain. So it's kind of a win-win. Obviously, there's going to be scenarios where we have opportunities that we need to jump at, and we should, that make, you know, the management a little harder. But as long as we're doing it environmentally, responsibly and sustainably, I think that, you know, all of our sites will be relatively, the management plan will be relatively straightforward as we can imagine.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're spending this half hour talking to R.J. Thompson. He's the executive director of the Vermont Huts Association. If you have any thoughts about huts, things you'd like to see, don't want to see, experiences you've had, you can join us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. One of the strange things and unfortunate things that happened, I know, was that Vermont Huts Association was given an off-the-grid home, which was going to be a hut that then burned down. And this is down in southern Vermont, south-central Vermont, maybe.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So what happens there, and what's the plan?
Well,
and yeah, explain where that is, too.
Certainly. It's technically in the town of Chittenden. It was in the town of Chittenden. You know, it was called, we referred to it as a South Pond Hut. It was a beautiful off-grid home that was conserved by, on a parcel of land, 2,700 acres, conserved by the Trust for Public Land, soon to be transferred to Green Mountain National Forest. And that cabin home, fully off-grid, you know, we were going to retrofit it to sleep guests, had everything you need, really. Definitely was going to be the most elaborate of our huts because it was being, you know, gifted to us. And sadly, it was burned to the ground by an arson, actually. Have not identified or found that suspect. So the plan currently is to work through some permitting and processes to determine if we can do a rebuild up there. We hope to work with the Forest Service to figure something out in the future and what that might look like to be determined because it's still going through the transfer process. But we're hopeful we can get it rebuilt up there and offer, you know, a really, just really incredible destination for backcountry users. It's kind of at the nexus of recreation in that area. The Catamount Trail goes really close by. The Long Trail is only a quarter mile away from this site. And the emerging Velomont Trail, which is the end-to-end mountain bike trail that will connect all these mountain bike chapters, would also come right by this site potentially.
Explain the Velomont Trail. That may be a new idea for some listeners.
Certainly. Velomont Trail kind of emerged around the same time Vermont Huts was coming, you know, onto the scene. And the idea, though, of an end-to-end mountain bike route probably existed, you know, long before that. And, you know, grassroots, just like huts, have been chapters talking to other chapters, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could connect? And, you know, so the name Velomont Bike Vermont, kind of the nod to our friends to the north, emerged, and that's now being led by Angus McCusker, who also heads up the Rasta Trail Group down in Rochester. And we work very closely with them to ensure that hut locations, potentially new hut locations, align well with trail connection activities between those chapters.
So as we're talking about users, what do you envision? So how does one hut network serve bikers, hikers, skiers, walkers? How does that happen?
Right. So we're not, you know, we're not naive. We understand that every single hut just, you know, could meet that demand. Like, what we do try to do, though, is locate new huts in places that actually could do that. But existing structures, maybe they're along the Catamount Trail where there's no mountain bike trail nearby, no hiking nearby. But for 4 months of the year, it serves a really good set of users during the winter. We do our best to site new structures where we can meet that demand for year-round connectivity. So, like I said in the very beginning of the conversation, there's just so many different trail networks out there right now. It'd be very hard to make sure every single hut serves every user group. But we're doing our best now to find spots where they overlap. There are a lot of places in the state where there is overlap. Some spots maybe in the central part where the Catamount Trail and Long Trail are a little further apart. But primarily between the towns of Killington and Stowe, if you stay on the east side of the mountain, you're going to be able to, east side of the spine of the Green Mountains, you'll be able to link into a bunch of mountain bike chapters. And there's a few good backcountry zones that are also on that side of the spine.
So you have become something of a Pied Piper of huts in Vermont. What inspired you to pursue this?
You know, I really kind of fell into it, to be honest. But it's been a real passion, I think, since my younger years to be in tiny little quaint, you know, cabins in the forest. I remember at a young age going to in the Poconos on camping trips with my father, and I think probably at that young age is when I really, you know, wanted to be outside as much as possible. And then living in Jackson Hole ski bumming for 3 years after college, you know, you go from Vermont to Jackson, that's kind of what you do if you're a skier, or you go somewhere else that has bigger mountains, and then you come back eventually because you remember that Vermont's actually pretty great. But I digress. In Jackson, I lived in a van for about 9 months, so that was that prepared me for roughing it a little bit, and also gave me a sense for how to be efficient in small spaces. And we also, you know, living out there, visited a couple of networks in Idaho. Was fortunate enough to, you know, head over to Switzerland to experience some of those huts as well. So, you know, I think it's grown over the years, and you know, you kind of pick up a lot just through experience, and hopefully can bring some of that to, you know, a little bit of that flavor to the Vermont Hut Network.
And you know, I should point out, I've written a lot about skiing, and I have come across accounts from the 1940s of skiers of that era waxing poetic about what they were sure was next, which was a network of huts through the mountains. And in fact, I interviewed Johannes von Trapp, now the owner of something that no one would accuse of being a hut, the Trapp Family Lodge. But he, when he came here in the 60s with his family from Austria, the Alps, his vision was that this was the future and that it would connect from Stowe to Bolton. And I think he surprised himself when the thing that people were interested was not his little huts, but his big hotel that you could drive to. So this is actually an old idea that you are now championing. So hopefully, we're already getting it further down the trail than it once was. I want to ask, though, about your own mountain passions. Some people may have heard of you in relation to some of your amazing endurance, hiking, and running exploits. So tell us a little bit about some of your endurance sports stuff.
It's a practice in self-torture a little bit. But I got into endurance racing, both on, I guess, a mountain bike and running, again, out in Jackson Hole. I was always a runner, you know, growing up and in high school. But I started with the 24 Hours of Moab race in Jackson, in Moab, Utah, while I was living in Jackson.
That was a bike race.
That's a bike race, yeah. And I did that as a team event, which was extremely fun. You know, you're out there in the middle of the desert biking. You're by yourself at that point. The race has been going on for half a day, and so the field has spread out, and you're just alone with your light. It's beautiful. The stars are out. And that, I think, definitely laid the foundation for kind of or lit the fire, I guess, because when I moved back to Vermont and started training in the Green Mountains and primarily on the Long Trail, a lot of my runs were just at night, you know, with a headlamp, and did the Vermont 50 a couple of years in a row.
Which is a 50-mile running race.
The Vermont 50, you can do it as a 50K, a 50-mile run. I've done both, and the first 2 years I placed, and I really wanted to win, and so I did 50K the third year. And when I won it that year, which seems like a long time ago now, but I decided the following year I really wanted to try to go after the long trail speed record, the unsupported speed record. And so just progression, like anything, you know, you kind of dabble a little bit.
And what is the record that you were trying to beat?
Back then, it was 6 days, 17 hours, and 25 minutes.
To run how many miles?
273, depending on reroutes and whatnot of the LT, the long trail.
All right, so do the math for me. How many miles a day is that?
I was hoping to do it in just under 6 days, so shave about 17 hours off. And so that would have been about 45 miles a day. On the LT, and luckily I don't have to do that because someone just broke it.
You famously, a lot of people were paying attention. You did attempt it.
I did attempt it.
And so you trained very hard for it.
Certainly.
How do you train to run 45 miles a day in the mountains for 6 days?
You train in the mountains for many days prior to your attempt, and you have a loving wife who you know, allows you to take time away from home for, you know, a few days, you know, 2 and 3 days in a row, for multiple, you know, months on the weekends primarily, and you log a lot of miles.
And you have a support team to supply you with food and stuff?
No support team.
So how do you
unsupported
feed yourself?
You pack it, you carry it all on your back.
So
you're starting, you know, unsupported. There's supported and there's unsupported. Supported means you have aid with you and a support crew giving you food and supplying your water. Unsupported means you've got to start and finish with everything. So when I did the attempt or tried the attempt, I made it to Appalachian Gap about 8 hours ahead of the record time. So I was on pace to set the record, but I had kind of destroyed my knee in the process.
You come from where, Canada?
I started in Canada, yeah.
To App Gap. So you'd come, a third of the way?
Yeah, well, more. It's like 110 miles, roughly. And I took a slip. It rained for two. It didn't help that it rained for 2 days in a row. And I took a slip coming down Bolton Mountain, actually. And by the time I got to my shelter that night, I woke up the next morning and was moving less than a mile an hour. It was pouring and it was dark and foggy. So I got to App Gap and I knew I wasn't going to break the record. And I knew if I continued, maybe I would finish, but maybe my knee would be in worse shape. So I called it. And I tried again the following year and had a hamstring ordeal. And then I got married and now I have a kid. And now we got this hut thing going.
Wait, you're
going
to blame this on the kid that you can't run 45 miles times 6 days?
I'll say this.
You can have any excuse you want.
I know. I'll say this.
Leave the kid out of it.
Barkley, it's not your fault. Barkley, I love you. The record has been lowered to the point that I was aiming for. So it's great that it's been realized, and I will go for it again. I don't know when.
Who and when did the record get set?
I'm blanking on the name. It was not a local, but the guy's a beast. He did it in just under 6 days, which is what I was shooting for, unsupported. And he also, I think, has set a number of other unsupported records prior to. And Nika Myers actually just set the unsupported record, female record, which is also incredibly fast. So there's probably more out there, more other, you know, other individuals who are equally sick in the mind and want to tackle it.
All right, so I do have to just put to you my thoughts on endurance racing in the mountains, which is, what's the point? It's like running through an art gallery with the lights off.
But it's not. So appreciate that.
Sorry.
Let me rethink my life. So when you're out there on the trail in the middle of the night and you've got your headlamp on, you do see and you hear, and your senses are kind of on high alert because there's moose out there and there's bear, and bear are generally afraid of you. But you hear the forest in a way that you know, maybe you don't necessarily hear during the day when, you know, there's more, there are other things moving around, there's other people on the trail. You're usually by yourself. You don't see people hiking at night. If you see someone hiking at 2 or 3 in the morning, keep running faster, because unless they're going for a speed record, you're not sure who they are. I've heard moose plunge into ponds. I've seen a bear cub up in a tree, which also kept me moving rather quickly in the dark. And I've come across porcupines, and I've heard coyotes howling. You know, so all these things, it's sure maybe you can't see them, but you can hear them, and you can connect with them maybe even better than if you could see them from afar.
Okay. Well said. I know that Vermont Huts is in the middle of a year-end fundraising campaign to get these huts built, to get Vermonters through the mountains in a little bit of comfort and fun. So tell us a little bit about where people can go to donate if they're so inspired.
Yep. You can go to vermonthuts.org, and on that homepage, you'll have a little button that says donate. What's really great about the campaign right now is that the first $5,000 in donations will be matched by our friends at Outdoor Gear Exchange, who've supported us from the start, really. And also the first $500, which I think we've already eclipsed, but it was being matched by Weston Backcountry, which is a snowboard and ski company out in Colorado.
Okay. Yeah. Well, RJ Thompson, I want to thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks, David. Great to be here.
RJ Thompson is the executive director of the Vermont Huts Association.